You go into your shower feeling tired, but as soon as you reach for the Irish Spring, your day immediately gets better. That crisp, fresh, unmistakable Irish Spring scent zings your brain and awakens your senses. So when you finally emerge from the shower 37 minutes later because you pay the water bill so you can stay in there as long as you want, you're ready to take on the day and smell great doing it. Irish Spring body wash and bar soap. Fresh, green, Irish. Shop now at a store near you.
Getting ready to take on spring? Make your first move with the reliable performance and power of Steel battery tools. From hedge trimmers and mowers to string trimmers and more, right now you can save $50 on select battery tool sets. Real Steel. Offer valid on select AK system sets through June 16, 2024. See participating retailer for details.
Hey everyone, this is Jody Sweetin from the podcast How Rude, Tanneritos. I've been needing a quick getaway with my family, and the 2024 Hyundai Santa Fe is the perfect vehicle to take us there. It has standard third row seating, so I'm able to pack my entire family, plus pets in the car, while also having enough room for our camping essentials. Available H-Track all-wheel drive will get us through any dirt trails, and available dual wireless charging pads will ensure we never have to worry about getting stuck with a dead phone in the middle of nowhere. Visit HyundaiUSA.com. or call 562-314-4603 for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.
The Around the NFL Podcast is the weakest link. Goodbye.
Uh-oh, welcome to another edition of the Around the NFL Podcast. My name is Dan Hansis. I come to you from a virtual room filled with heroes. Mark Sessler, Greg Rosenthal, and joining us once again, Patrick Claibon. What's up, boys?
Salutations, Dan. We've made it. 11 weeks. Oh, my gosh.
Yeah. We've done it. That is Matt Money Smith's money tag today, perfectly timed, because it's finally upon us, listeners. I don't know if you saw on Twitter. This has been something we've been talking about offline for some time. When does Ricky Hollywood's guest appearance on the NBC game show The Weakest Link finally premiere? And we found out the answer during Monday Night Football. My wife was watching the show with her parents, and there it is, the promo at the end of the ep, Ricky Hollywood. And I want to bring in Ricky a second. Hey, Ricky. Okay, hey. I just got to tell you something. First of all, very excited. Monday yep. night, set your DVRs, watch live, whatever. Forget about Monday Night Football next week. It's all about Ricky Hollywood. I asked you to cut three things from that brief promo that I am going to be completely honest with you, Ricky, I'm nervous about.
Okay.
Okay. And you've done a good job with the non-disclosure agreement. We are being completely honest when we say that Erica was told not to say how the show went. We don't know how the show went, but we got some breadcrumbs here from the promo. So I'm going to play, ask you to play three. First, let's hear from Jane Lynch, the host of The Weakest Link. Here's one clip from her.
Well, this is what happens when you vote off all the smart people.
Okay. Mm. I don't know if that dog was part of the problem.
Yeah, I don't know what the canine suddenly is.
I mean, I think it was the dog. Like, the dog was proving the point there.
Yeah, they're trying to expand Jane to Lynch's a different audience.
All right, so the line. Let's hear that line again. Sorry.
Well, this is what happens when you vote off all the smart people.
Okay, that's a breadcrumb. Claibon, that qualifies as a breadcrumb that is disturbing on some level. Perhaps not as disturbing as the second Jane Lynch breadcrumb that's dropped. Let's hear that.
Is it too late to get new contestants?
Okay. Now there's real cause for concern. And finally, Erica, we hear from Ricky very briefly in the promo, and I'd like to say it doesn't connect dots with the Jane Lynch teasers in the promo. But I'd be lying.
This is terrible.
What was that, Erica?
This is terrible.
I don't think it went well. Oh, Patrick, am I reading into this wrong? Am I being too negative?
Yes, I do think you are. The show takes a very deprecating tone, especially right. The promotions to the show. They want to hit you, set you up, and then give you the dead leg and cut it back and get towards the end zone. or the, you know, the touchdown area, if you will. And I think that things went well. Honestly, I do. In the TV promotions world, I'm looking forward to Monday. I think we've got some good things in store.
I feel like you kind of need a translator for Jane Lynch. Like, isn't her role, she's meant to come on and be sort of smarmy and like firing arrows at people. So what does it really mean? That said, it would be a bit of a surprise if Erica fared well based on what you've called there, Dan.
I mean, she sounds fairly. I know part of the role of being the host, the old British bird that had the gig before. She was sardonic as well. But I don't know, Ricky. I hope things went well. I'm looking forward to it. We're all going to be watching, and it syncs up nicely with our Tuesday edition of the podcast next week to unpack it. But how are you feeling, knowing that your life may very well change in 72 to 96
yeah,
hours.
I'm ready for the public to see what actually happened. You know, did they pick the greatest, you know, screenshot to show me in this promo? No. But you know what? I think, like, I can handle some adversity. And someone tweeted at me, like, oh, the camera doesn't add 20 pounds. It adds 20 years. So I was like, why would you say that out loud? That's so upsetting. But yeah, that's true. Yeah, this show has aged me. And it was very, a very, very stressful experience.
I would say one little breadcrumb, you know, outside of the promo. Had Ricky gone on and won, you know, $400,000 or something, would she have, you know, scooted over to a new apartment with like a crazy man and a frozen pizza 5 feet away? I think she would be up in the hills or something. So I don't know. Maybe the money's not landed.
Well,
we don't know.
I don't know if this is the case or not, but I did have to sign something that you wouldn't get paid until 150 days from when your episode airs.
All right.
So,
man,
she's doing a really good job of keeping us in the dark. I'm going to be honest here. And perhaps, you know, perhaps Erica could have been one of the people that was smart that got voted off. And maybe she was saying this is terrible because she did get voted off. Maybe Jane Lynch is caping for Erica Tamposi because she's amazing.
You know, your dollop of optimism is really welcome around these parts, Patrick Laban. All right. Yes. Good show. It's going to be a good show when Ricky's on The Weakest Link. We got a good show on the Around the NFL podcast today. Much to get into. We're going to begin our look ahead to week 11. And we have an excellent, excellent week 11 matchup on Thursday Night Football, the Cardinals at the Seahawks. So we're going to talk about that game. Also, Greg wrote a woozy banger, the old debrief, the old Rosenthal debrief, talking about teams who have every right to be frustrated at this point in the season. I'll go through Greg's list and maybe throw in a couple of our own that maybe didn't make Greg's list. But first, let us start, as we always do on this show, with the Monday Night Football recap. We have to. It's contractually obligated.
Still get a first down on 3rd and 4. Cousins throwing, and it is caught. Touchdown. It's Adam Thielen for the second time tonight, and Minnesota jumps back on top.
Sell it. ESPN, Monday Night Football. That was the call from Steve Levy. Kirk Cousins throws 2 touchdowns, both, as you heard, to Adam Thielen, the second, the difference in a 19-13 win over the Chicago Bears at Soldier Field, a game where the Bears dragged the Vikings down to their level, and it was a dark place. It is tough to watch Chicago Bears football in 2020, and that is coming from a Jets fan. Mark, first of all, congratulations on your lock. You sweated it out a little bit, I imagine, but you got your lock with the Vikings. But did you learn anything about Minnesota in this game?
You know what I learned about them? I mean, I think that our role when we're covering 32 teams is that, you know, you have to be flexible with early season impressions as the season goes along. And my impression of the Vikings continues to change. You know, they were 1-5. We're all kind of 1-5 in 2020. And you decide whether to kind of work out of that or sink deeper. And I think the Vikings have taken the high road here. And that was these divisional games in November, when everyone's kind of feeling a little bit used up. I thought it was a tough win because if you look at what happened, they were swept by the Bears last year.
And
the year before. And they scored 26 points in 2 games against the Vikings last year, 30 in 2018. So I think it's for them. Your season remains alive because you got out of this. Dalvin Cook, who had been completely shut down against the Bears last season, really the last three games against them, 96 yards. It wasn't the typical Dalvin Cook game. But, you know, I felt like they could only win when Kirk Cousins was also throwing the ball, 12, 13 times a game. He had to do a little bit more last night. It wasn't perfect. But you're always lucky to be playing a Bears offense that still thinks it's 1931. And every week there's a new drama created. And, we can get into that. But the Vikings took care of business. They're the better team. So I'd rather at this time of year, I don't care what the records are, let's dispose of the junk. I don't have any more time for the junk. The Vikings are proving to be a little bit higher than that, and so ride on, Minnesota.
Yeah, they proved to me they were so much better than the Bears, and they were a little unlucky. You know, I saw Patrick's face the second this game's, recap started. He's like, oh, we got to talk about this game. I mean, poor Kirk Cousins. It's like the bar keeps changing. He finally plays a really good game on Monday Night Football against a really good opponent. Adam Thielen drops a pass that turns into an interception on a perfect throw in the red zone, and his special teams is god-awful, giving up a kick return in terrible field position all day, or else they would have blown out a good defense. His running game was terrible. He's 10 of 11 on third down for 149 yards and two touchdowns, and most of that's in third and long because, the Vikings just refused to stop running Dalvin Cook for 1 and 2 yards on first down. They're going to use this guy up, giving him 30 carries a game. Sometimes you got to adjust to the game that's in front of you, but they probably did that because they thought, we don't really need to do much to beat this lousy Bears offense, and I suppose they were right on that, so good for Kirk Cousins. This is the team of Hans Istiel, the Minnesota Vikings, back in it.
They are definitely back in it. I thought they had the chance to do it, and here they are. And when you saw Claybon, Kirk Cousins is a guy that we all like to have our fun with.
Why is this me?
Well, no, I want to set you up here. I want you to be able to chime in here. I'm doing a little host move there.
Oh.
Kirk Cousins is a guy we like to have fun with, and that's why, when he completed that pass to Kyle Rudolph to clinch the game, essentially late in the fourth quarter. I mean, that isn't as excited as I've ever seen Kirk Cousins. Maybe next to his high school plays where he was singing Oklahoma.
Yes.
And then you're like, why is he this excited? I know he just probably won the game. It didn't even run out the clock, but probably won it. And then you realize, Kirk Cousins is human. Kirk Cousins, as much as we say we're sick of talking about, that Kirk Cousins can't win in prime time and he's 0-9 on Monday Night Football, he's sick of it too. So when he completes that pass, he's celebrating because another Kirk Cousins narrative went by the wayside.
Which Dan, is an indictment of Kirk Cousins, because literally Monday night is the games count the same. It's a dumb narrative in the first place. a win on Monday is the same as a win on Sunday at 1:25 Eastern. It literally does not matter.
Don't bring your Claybon logic into
it
this.
It doesn't.
Again,
it's a game. It's a win. And the same thing. I thought the same thing. Dan, there's a minute and 35 seconds to go when they get that first down to Kyle Rudolph, and I'm thinking the game's not over, Kirk. You guys
got to get another first down.
It was pretty over. It was pretty.
Well, the thing is, so they're showing the graphic, which was the only Monday Night Football CG graphic that I've enjoyed all year. The Office Space.
That was good.
Homage. Right to Kirk Cousins' record on Monday night, but literally, it does. There's no difference between winning.
Well, either way, they need to win
prime
this
time
game
or not, and it helped. But as you guys mentioned, the Bears, they need a quarterback that can make plays. Matt Nagy needs a quarterback that can make plays, and so whatever last night was, a lot of it, as Greg mentioned, had to do with what the Bears could not do on offense, and there was a point where there was a third down, the Vikings blitz in the A-gap because that's Mike Zimmer and that's what he's going to do. And it was one of those rare occasions where there was a short receiver to get the ball to, and Nick Foles bailed and threw some candle-in-the-wind ball 20 yards out of bounds, and Anthony Miller was, wide open directly in front of him. Mm. And I don't really know what the progression was on that play. To be clear, I'm not some savant that knows much about anything in terms of the schematics of football, but I just know what we saw last night was not going to work. And to Mark's point last night, I get that the people of Chicago care, and they should care. It's a franchise a lot of them grew up with. But for those of us who are watching this team, that from the front office decisions and on down, they just keep making these mistakes. I don't know why we're so involved in a franchise.
too many Bears.
Yeah,
too many
Bears games. It's just not – they're not doing anything. Like, congratulations on getting Eddie Jackson after he suffered all those injuries at Alabama and fell to you. Congratulations on trading for a future Hall of Famer in Khalil Mack. But if you can't get guys open and you can't find a quarterback in an era where everybody seems to be on the verge of finding their quarterback, none of that stuff matters.
Yeah, there's only a handful of teams that seem completely eyes wide shut to evolving in 2020. And, you know, you have to assume they'll at some point realize it too. The Bears, my one thing with them is, and when we come at these teams, the first thing that happens is you get a pocket of the fan base saying, you know, don't be mean to my team. It's like, actually what we're trying to do, and this is an old Wes-ism, is we're not putting up with it, nor should you as fans, because I've been watching football since 1985, and the Bears have been the same team essentially through that entire run. They've had four top 10 offenses since 1991. Four.
Christ, that's many.
Well, I mean, you know, there's one or two years where that's occurred, and they're not like second or third. They're like 10th. They've been a defensive-oriented team that struggles to score points, I feel like, my entire life. Let's try a new path.
And here's the weird thing about Monday's game. The Vikings badly outplayed them in several facets, especially on defense. And Cordarrelle Patterson's kickoff return got them in the lead. The punt return later in the game put them in position again. And somehow, if Nick Foles just hits that pass to Anthony Miller, it should have been Bears 20, Vikings 19. And that's why I think the Bears, and for reasons that Mark just explained as well, are a sneaky, I'm not saying pain rankings, but in terms of a frustrating fan experience.
Oh, I agree with you.
For sure.
Bears are up there because they're not fun to watch. And then you have games like last night where it becomes just a public execution by everyone that just teeing off about how boring and terrible your team is. It's got to get old.
Their offensive line is so bad. I mean, it's part of it. So Foles combined with that offensive line, and they've been banged up and they've had COVID issues. I think where Mitchell Trubisky's coming out of the bye as their starter. Foles' injury that he had at the end of the game is not as serious as they feared. And it sounded like he was day-to-day and has a chance to be ready to play coming out of the bye. But on Monday, or Tuesday rather, Nagy said that they'll look at everything, including a possible quarterback change. And when they say that, they always make the change.
Yeah, you've got to make a move.
So if they're sticking, if they were sticking with him, I think they would say so. Maybe the injury will be an excuse. I don't think it really matters.
And by the way, that game coming out of the bye is again on prime time against the Green Bay Packers. So, they are pushing into this. The NFL schedule makers, they've had some tricks up their sleeves this year, and this trick is on us.
I do like that Justin Jefferson had his moment. That dude is, I think, would be rookie of the year if they didn't allow. I think they should separate quarterbacks and other players in all these awards so that we could have like a Justin Jefferson versus Tristan Wirfs conversation or whatever. Because Justin Jefferson is like, I don't know if he's better than Stephon Diggs, but he's in that caliber right now. Like that's where he is as like a top 12 receiver in the league right now, where Thielen is the clear number two and Jefferson's one. Like, that's pretty amazing.
We could get a sponsor to pony up. Go ahead, Dan.
Oh, I know where you're going already with this.
You're making the case for the offensive player of the year.
Well, then say quarterbacks aren't eligible. That is part of my problem, is that a lot of times the same quarterback wins both awards, and then some other years it's like they decide to spin it off into Drew Brees or some running back or something as a consolation prize.
Well, I mean, Justin Jefferson should have become a quarterback back in like seventh grade.
We could deal with this
specific issue.
Well, I think we should get a sponsor to pony up some more money, right, for the all-pro rookie team so we can give all of these guys a little more shine.
Well, and maybe we'll give out the awards. We'll give the non-quarterback awards on our
cameo,
show January 3rd. January 3rd. Get ready.
Yeah, that's a great idea. Hey, Ricky, this is the part of the show where I ask Ricky seriously to do some show pre-production work, and then she ignores it. Make a note of this, please, and bring it up to me after the season. We want to do some type of rookie award show after the regular season.
please, or even like non-quarterback awards too. Like, some, let's give out some non-quarterback.
Let's give out some awards, please. Yeah. Make a note of it.
You got it.
Don't let me down.
I won't.
I can see her taking that note right now with a number two pencil on a piece of paper.
She's watching YouTube cat videos as I'm talking. Let's give the last word in an annoying, dumb game to John Perry.
Yeah, that is helmet to contact to the helmet of the quarterback there with the right hand, forcible contact. One of the things that happens when there's not a lot of penalties in a game, your mind gets lulled into this sleep, and maybe you're not processing things the way that you should. That is a foul, and we should have had a flag there to extend the drive. You know,
that was such a fitting like breakdown from the rules official guy, Patrick.
Yeah, you can hear him trying to make a case, right, for apologizing for the officials, not realizing that he's making a case for getting rid of officials just in general, because of their overall uselessness. The idea that, right, that we are so bored of this game that we have no part in, that sometimes we forget to play our supposedly integral role in officiating the game. So we just kind of, whatever, we just kind of wing it, man. Sometimes,
I mean, if there's a kickers club, and then there maybe is a zebras club for these officials, that's the kind of stuff you only talk about behind closed doors. You don't John Perry go out and tell everyone that officials take plays off, quarters off, that they snooze mentally. You don't reveal that.
I felt he was trying to be human, and he probably shouldn't have. I did, like, as someone who's a space cadet, like, doesn't your mind just sometimes wander, like, even when you're on, like, live TV? It's a problem, for sure.
Yes, but that's one of the reasons, like, I'm not put on a lot
of
live
TV.
Wait
a second. Yeah, I should be paying attention.
But you're not supposed to give the tour of the sausage factory, right?
I do like that. Exactly. Remember in the 90s when it was like a late 90s show on Fox and everybody was super pissed about it in the magic world? This guy was like showing all the tricks, all the different sleight of hands tricks and cutting the body in half with a saw trick.
You don't do that.
And you don't do that. John Perry, this is not a Fox reality show. Come
it's
on.
It's the
now.
Prestige, man.
All right. Good stuff. Let's never think about that game ever again. Greg. I don't want to be confrontational here, Greg, but I really liked your debrief. The one thing I didn't like is that you allowed our editorial team to use the HTML formatting of my power rankings when you ranked the 11 teams that should be frustrated after week 10. Mm.
That's out of bounds.
I didn't know that. I never actually
looked at my property.
Haven't they used that format, though, for years, basically, for, like, the Shook quarterback rankings, the position rankings?
Right, but, Greg, once it's attached to a Dan product,
I have not,
Dan's not going to consider what happened pre-Dan.
I have not checked that out. I didn't even know that. I'm glad they did that. It really makes it, like, a ranking.
All right. I mean, there was a lot of explanations there. I will connect with Ali Bunpari to get to the bottom.
This reminds me of when the previous owner of the power rankings called me into an office, set like an hour long meeting for this meeting, and spoke to me for 45 minutes that he didn't want us to use the phrase positional power rankings because he sort of owned the IP for power rankings.
Yeah.
After which I was like, why didn't you just like email me? It's like, okay, you just talked to me for 45 minutes.
I think there were deeper things happening there, Greg. I think you did too.
You know, I don't seem like such an ass anymore now, do I?
No, you're second in that ranking.
Folks, get right, low.
Calm down. Hey, Sessler, simmer down over there.
Why? I'm just in
my
house.
You're just a little, fired up over there.
It's a good segue. I think this is the time of year people are a little ornery. It's like we haven't gotten to Thanksgiving yet. It's been a long season, but you're not to like the stretch run, and that's what these rankings were about. Who's ornery? Who's a little cranky? Who's pissed off? Like, you know, Lamar said he was pissed off. Who else? Who did Peterson was like, I'm pissed off. Every LaFleur was, I'm pissed off. There was a lot of pissed off.
Pissed off, Angelo.
Let's listen. The good way to get into this conversation, because you do have the Eagles at number one, and the Eagles are really, you know, 3-5-1. They just got beat by G-Man, and Carson Wentz is a mess, and part of that goes on Eagles coach Doug Peterson, and then he goes on local radio, and he has to deal with this intro, which just boggles my mind.
Who do you blame the most for the Eagles' 10-point loss to the Giants? 72% coaching.
Head coach of the Eagles, Doug Peterson. Hi, Doug.
Good morning, Angelo. Thanks for the lead-in. I appreciate that.
I'm sorry. That was just...
That was awesome. I know. Listen, that just puts me in a great mood today. Already in a good mood. Oh, appreciate it.
Oh, I kind of felt you probably wouldn't be in a good mood.
Can I hang up now?
No, please don't, Doug.
I'm feeling my obligation right now.
Should.
I hang up. I feel my obligation.
Doug, I fully understand.
I'm pissed off, Angelo.
All right. What about, Doug?
I'm pissed off.
I love it.
I didn't even hear about this story. That is rough.
Can you imagine? How incompetent can you be bringing in the coach of the team?
I'm pissed off, Angelo.
Oh, what was that, Doug?
I'm pissed off, Angelo.
I get it. I'm with you, Doug. Yeah, he has every right to be.
Because he's like an employee there, ultimately. They're paying, he's working for that radio station.
Well, and this sort of smarmy, viewers poll on what they're most annoyed by.
Yeah, and the idea they don't know what they're running before the head coach of the Philadelphia Eagles comes on the show. Shut up.
Yeah, the Zoom meetings between the Eagles, and this happened with Andy Reid, too.
I can't get over that.
When they're losing, man... The reporters in Philly really get into the coaches, a little more aggressively than just about anyone else.
But,
maybe
here's the deal. If you're going to do that, then own up to it. Don't be like, I'm sorry, coach, that we only have so many things to interest. No, be a jerk if you're going to be a jerk. It's a guy won a Super Bowl and Nick Foles is the starting quarterback. let's be real, man.
I'm pissed off, Angelo.
Yikes. Anyway, you have the Eagles at number one, Greg. Why do they stand out above all other teams in terms of who should be frustrated right now?
Yeah, well, we don't have to go too long because we've talked so much. But I think it's because they're stuck in this terrible spot where they still matter so much because they're still winning. This should be a time. Mike Silver mentioned on our air that they're going to look at blowing things up possibly, but they're in first place, so it's like this endless cycle where I think five wins is going to win them this division with that tie. If you look at all the schedules, if they can scrape two more wins out, it's like this purgatory. But I think what's similar about the top of the list is if your franchise quarterback or the guy you were hoping to be is a problem, I think that's the worst spot you can be. They're in this in-between where they have old players worth a ton of money, making a ton of money, and this should have been a go year. And it just feels like everything about this is going to be drawn out because of this division, because they might even make the playoffs. Like, either way, it just seems so painful and impossible almost, how they're going to have to decide what to do.
It's a pretty interesting departure from a couple years ago when the Eagles front office under Howie Roseman was this analytics darling that found a perfect way to marry numbers and on-field scouting and old football, knowledge with new knowledge. And now they have huge cap issues going into next season.
It all goes back to Wentz, though. If Wentz doesn't stink, then we probably wouldn't be talking about this. But they're going to have to make a decision there.
Flip side, if someone told you you only need five wins in August, you only need five wins to win the division, wouldn't that put you in a good mood?
But I mean, that's the thing. Well, I think to Greg's point, if you win the NFC East this year, what does it say about your organization? Not much at all. You don't have the Cowboys on this list, but I'll jump in here since we're talking NFC East. To me, they have to be frustrated because we talked about it going into the season that it seemed like things could break right for them finally. It was all there, and they should have walked to a division title this year if things played out the way they should have. They should have been picking up five or six wins in this bad division, and they should have had Dak Prescott on the field and some of these, Gerald McCoy and some of these other players. You win 12 or 13 games potentially. Who knows? But instead, the injury gods turn on you. Your roster is worse than you realize and doesn't have the depth to survive the injuries, and you go up in flames. So it's like this felt like in what's been an endless waiting period for the Cowboys to really make another run. This seemed like a year set up well for them, and they just were not able to capitalize on it.
It hurts Patrick, closet Cowboys fan. I haven't totally even given up on them because their defense has looked much better the last couple weeks, and Dalton's coming back. I don't know.
How is it going to get worse? Is the question with the Cowboys defense. And I when I was looking at Greg's list, right, the idea that somebody should be frustrated, right? So if we're going from the perspective of a fan base, you can be frustrated, but who are you frustrated with? And if you're if you're a fan of the Dallas Cowboys, ultimately you're frustrated with the circumstance of your franchise quarterback breaking his leg, right? Nobody, in theory, could have prevented that, but you could have had your owner and de facto general manager pay that quarterback, because another thing that adds to frustration is seeing players who your team developed go to a franchise like a Byron Jones going to Miami, who was a perennial loser. Now they're in the midst of a playoff race, and the idea was you can't keep Byron Jones because you have to pay the quarterback. But you don't pay the quarterback, so what was the point of losing this talent? And now your defense is giving up points, is leaking like a sieve, and what do you have to show for it? You've got nothing. This failed season in which the division is horrible. Like you said, Dan, like, who wins the East? Does it really matter? Everybody's mad anyway.
Mark, what jumped out to you on this list, or perhaps not on the list?
I agree. I think that there's a lot of arguments that if you are part of the Niners organization, I gathered together, and I'm not going to waste 40. It would take probably a minute and a half to read off all the injuries they've had and corona issues. There's like 46 names here. I mean, that alone, you're the defending NFC title champions. And I would say that a little bit in the Wentz world, you have, this season is a lost cause. And I'll tell you why, because Dan and Eric and I forked them two Thursday nights ago, so the organization knows that it's over for them this season. but a larger question looms. You've given $74 million to a quarterback for 30 starts over the course of 4 years, and I think you have to. There are narratives and areas and possible future scenarios where Jimmy G is not the starter here anymore after this. And you might be starting over at quarterback. Or if you don't, you've got to continue to probably play around Jimmy G, which at some point gets old if you're Kyle Shanahan. So you're entering into an offseason where a lot is about to happen.
Mm. I want to bring up two that maybe people be a little more surprised around the list. Number one is the Titans, because like you mentioned with the Cowboys, I think things were set up. We were starting to feel like the Titans had turned a corner. They were 5-0. They're 2-2 in games that have been decided by more than a field goal this year. And they got pushed around on Thursday night. They got to play Baltimore and then Indianapolis again. Maybe they'll surprise me and they'll win both those games. But it doesn't. They feel a lot closer to just being another 9-7 team again with a bad defense and an offensive line that's kind of collapsing right now. That's a bad recipe. And then the Saints. Maybe the Saints fans don't feel like this, but this feels like it's it for Drew Brees, and the team's really good. And I think he's playing at a higher level than Peyton Manning was in his last year. But when Ian Rapoport started like mentioning all the other injuries, and I think there's some that maybe aren't even getting mentioned publicly because they're already getting in trouble with the injury report for not reporting his shoulder injuries and his previous rib injuries. He might be both shoulders. There might be something going on. Who knows? You want Brees out there. He'd been playing pretty well. He had reached the top 10 in the QB index, and I think they still have a chance. Maybe he'll come back to go win a Super Bowl. But right when things were starting to crank up, you lose him. Jameis didn't inspire a lot of confidence last week. Maybe he'll be better. But it's a bummer, I think, for that team who is more all in than any. We always say like all in. Who is more all in than the Saints being $100 million over the cap for next year? Yeah. And Brees almost certainly being in his last year. So maybe Brees comes back and he's fine by when it matters. But I would be a little frustrated right now after taking that hit.
I'm pissed off, Angelo.
I'll throw out, since you mentioned the Niners, Mark, and the idea that the window, which seemed open, shut very quickly, and hopefully they can open it back up again. But I'm very frustrated right now if I'm the Ravens, because there is a creeping sense of dread, perhaps, that, you know, your window where you were supposed to go and win this damn thing closed, and now you got to figure out how to do it a different way. Because last year, I come back to this a lot, because usually when you have the season that the Ravens had last year, when you kind of take the league by storm, you actually catch the league with their pants down, is what they did on offense last year with that with the tight ends and with the running backs, and then of course Lamar just being brilliant on top of it all. You just set the league on fire, and then obviously, unfortunately for them, things didn't work out in their playoff game. And now, who knows what's happening this year? Is it the league catching up a little bit? Is it injuries? Is it both? Is it Lamar not playing at the same level? It's probably a combination of all those things. And it's still early enough where they can get things figured out, and they still have a very high ceiling. But I would understand if inside that building and John Harbaugh puts his head to take a nap on his couch in his office, he's like, oh no, did we have our chance and the chance is already gone? I wonder if they think about that.
Well, I mean, that being said, right, they are a Willie Snead catch away from knocking off a team in their division that's the last undefeated team in the NFL. And not only that, right, they had the drive before that against the Steelers where they also had a chance to score. It was fourth down inside the red zone, and they didn't get that.
That's part of the problem, though. Isn't it with them? It's that ability to kind of just – make that play.
Well, the thing is, right, with windows in the NFL, the window is your window of opportunity. It's not like a digital yes no thing. It's do you have a chance, right? And they still have a chance.
I think they could win the Super Bowl this year. I really do, but there are some signs that are worrisome defensively, offensively, just in terms of they are known as sort of like a tough team, and they're no longer – like when their offensive line starts falling apart, and Nick Boyle is going to be part of that, that to me ruins it all. And they have not been able to set the edge. They're playing a Titans team. We'll talk about it on Thursday, but that matchup is fascinating because the Titans kind of match up well to go after that weakness. That said, they're such a good org, Dan – that like I think they have a chance to win the Super Bowl this year, but they're not someone I see as like a window team because they have what I would consider a top 10 quarterback to build around and an organization that's shown they can be a great defense year after year. And so I don't like see them going away. I just it'd be frustrating if they come out of this year not winning the Super Bowl, of course, after how good they were. But they just seem like one of those teams that's going to be around each and every year.
Yeah, here's the thing, though. I mean, the season, to Dan's point, it's the Ravens, so like the floor is different than what some of these other scenarios we're talking about. But Lamar Jackson mentioned early in the year when they were having a few up and down issues, like people have taken what Tennessee did in the playoffs and applied it to us, that he sees it week after week. Last week at this time, he was saying the teams are calling out their plays. I think at some point they're going to have to look at their offense and say, whether it's a Greg Roman issue or whatever, we're going to have to rethink how we attack teams because that shouldn't be happening to a team that's going to go win the Super Bowl.
Roman got fired pretty quickly after basically, quote-unquote, revolutionizing the NFL and doing an awesome job with Kaepernick, and then it fell apart quickly, and he got fired pretty quickly. I don't think that'll happen, but he just the way he does his offense, who knows?
Maybe finish the pizza.
I've thought about that. If you had that extra slice there, but he's probably frustrated because he should have made a full push to get the head coaching job last offseason. I mean, the Q rating is tumbling by the hour here.
Well, the thing that works in his favor, right, is the quarterback was an easy spot to blame when it was Kaepernick, and is probably going to be an easy spot to blame again when it's Lamar. The way that people question them, but at some point.
Not if you're the Ravens, though. Well, the Ravens aren't going to be questioning Lamar.
Especially after that game against New England, right, where other than that pick at the end of the first half, Lamar kind of did everything that he could possibly do, and they still didn't win the game. But on the terms of quarterbacks, you know, going through Greg's list, if I'm going to pick a team to be frustrated about, it's a team that already has their franchise quarterback, and the rest of the whole franchise is in absolute ruin. It's Greg's number two team, the Houston Texans, because like whether it's Jimmy G in Greg's top five or, you know, trying to see is Carson Wentz the future? Like nobody is questioning if Deshaun is the future, but just everything is in shambles. And like Tyrann Mathieu is on Twitter making jokes about fitting the culture because like Nuke Hopkins got traded. There's just so many angles for a fan of the Houston Texans to just be ready to flush this entire thing. And I think that's my number one.
They were number two on my list because of that.
Yeah, it crossed my mind also when I was doing just the research before the show that Deshaun Watson signed a four-year extension before the season starts. Now, you signed an extension I think pays him nearly $40 million a year, so no one's ever going to say, I wonder if he's doubting signing that extension because look at Dak Prescott right now. But at the same time, I'm sure he's obviously – frustrated. He's pissed off, Angelo, that he signs this deal, getting himself in deeper with an organization that right now seems a little bit rudderless, and he's tied to them. So
I'm really curious how the media and public outcry against the setup that the Texans have now, and you know, we don't need to talk about Jack Easterby specifically anymore.
Mark.
We've done it.
Health insurance. You got a dental plan.
No, I know. We don't
have to repeat ourselves, but I think it was really fascinating to see our guy, the network insider. It's in his contract. You have to say NFL Network insider, Ian Rappaport. It's really true. The other guys are just NFL Network's Tom Pelissero, but Ian's the insider.
Branding,
He had that report Sunday morning, and when he does these reports, he's always telling you something good, that they might keep Romeo Crennel next year, and that in that scenario, there might not be a GM, that it's just Easterby. And so that tells me, like, they're priming the pump. They're either checking out to see if the public totally revolts, or they're just like kind of trying to let everyone down easy that this is what's happening. When you start mentioning that they couldn't fly in people, you know, necessarily for interviews because of COVID for the new head coaching job, so you might as well keep Romeo Crennel. I mean, give me.
Well, that was a very generous report for the Texans. I mean,
what? What? I mean, what? You can't pick a head coach on Zoom? You have like 30,000 people in the stadium. You can't do a head coaching interview? I don't know.
Essentially it's a coup d'état, you know, happening before our eyes. So, you know, have a nice time with that, Texans fans.
All right, check out the debrief on NFL.com/Rosenthal.
I'll tell our editors, you know, that is Power Rankings property.
I thought it was the IP of the Power Rankings, and you want to. The Power Rankings is an important article on their website every week. I would think they'd want it to have a unique look, but apparently, you know, they have other ideas, and maybe I just need to get my opinion in there and shake things up.
I'm pissed off, Angelo.
All right. Before we go, Thursday Night Football. Good stuff here. This is really good. Cardinals at Seahawks. 2-6-3 teams. I feel like there's 7,000 6-3 teams in the league right now, and here's two of them, and they're in two very different places right now because the Cardinals, obviously coming off the drama of the Hail Mary, just a brilliant win against the Bills, and the Seahawks now they've lost 3 or 4, and they have a quarterback in Russell Wilson who has 7 turnovers in the last 2 weeks. So maybe he's in a little bit of a funk right now, which they quite frankly, Patrick Claibon, the Seahawks, as they're built, can't really deal with a Russell Wilson funk of any extended measure.
No, and when everything, like the whole plan is built off of Russell Wilson at this point. And so there's going to be fluctuations. They're going to be high variance because they don't have a defense. They lose to a Jared Goff team. Where the Rams lose Andrew Whitworth and you wonder what their long-term viability is at this point. But this is what it's going to be. Like we knew this early on that this defense can't stop anybody. So this is all going to kind of be built on whether or not Russ can complete those balls. And you see like the pass to Tyler Lockett being knocked away. And there's one pass to DK where Jalen Ramsey played great. If that happens in the playoffs, yeah, but there's only so many teams that can do that. They can match up with the Seahawks. So it's going to come down to Russ making a play in the final moments, which is what the Seahawks always come down to. So I don't think they can be too frustrated with their position because that's what it's going to be every single year.
I still think that their defense could get better. I mean, I guess I hadn't given up hopes because it doesn't make sense. They're usually well coached. And they have some talented players that if they can get to be average by the end of the season, they can be a factor. And that's why I think that's possible. I'm actually more concerned with their offense at the moment because that's how they're built. And I think this matchup's really interesting. First of all, it might be the first time that two teams play in primetime in a month. You know, two times in a month, both games in primetime. The other one was switched because of a COVID issue. But I love
game.
It. But who? Yeah, I love it. I mean, this sign me up for all these NFC West games. But I think it's kind of telling because I think the end of that game when Vance Joseph started cooking up the Seahawks offensive line with all those pressures and the Cardinals don't really get pressures on their own. That set up what's happened to the Seahawks since. Because the Seahawks offensive line had no answers. Russell Wilson, surprisingly for a veteran quarterback somewhat, had no answers. And that's been the game plan ever since. Even in the game against the Bills, which they put up points, they had no answer for the Bills blitz. Last week against the Rams, they had no answer. And that's an offensive line thing, that's a coaching thing, and that's a Russ thing. It's all together, and you got to expect the Cardinals to do it again.
Are you saying let Vance cook?
That's right. He's going to have to. He doesn't really have any players up front either. It's not like they had any pass rush as we saw against Buffalo. I mean, they barely sniffed Josh Allen.
I mean, the Broncos gave him a chef's kitchen, and he did attempt to cook, and that didn't go too well. So I don't know if he should be maybe.
Well, they gave him the whole house. He's not a guy that can take care of the whole house, but maybe he can do some damage in the kitchen.
That's a possibility. I feel like for the first time since we've been doing this show, I don't know, what is it, 1,300 episodes or something? I don't trust the Seahawks. This is the first time I've felt that way.
Why?
And Greg, I'm surprised. I know this is what you mean literally, but that you're more concerned about the offense than the defense. This defense...
Well, because like, they can't survive being an average offense, which they have been.
Well,
they
that would break the back, answers. But it's because the defense has been, you know, consistently horrible. That game against Arizona, I thought, was such an effective show of what both offenses could do. They combined for about 1,000 yards at the end of regulation. But there was no stopping, I thought, the Cardinals in terms of the play that you called unstoppable, Greg. Kyler Murray on the ground. I mean, he fried Buffalo as well. And I don't like the trajectory of this Seahawks team right now. They were exhausted at the end of that game against the Cardinals last time. Winded. Now, I know it went into overtime. That game had 25 possessions, but I don't see why the script would be that different. That was like 2 weeks ago. These teams haven't changed that much. And you get Jamal Adams back, but I don't think he's healthy. And like one guy alone is not going to make the difference here.
One thing that does help, if you're going to make an argument for the Seahawks, is there's a reason, right, that Alex Collins was off the street, that we haven't seen DJ Dallas make a lot of plays. And there's this, you know, super trite conversation about what running backs actually bring to the table. But, like, especially in pass protection with dealing with the blitz, it's going to help to have Chris Carson back. It's going to help Russ immeasurably, especially a guy who makes plays. Leaving the pocket to have a back out there.
That's killed them.
They can do that.
Now they haven't been able to pick up short yardage. They're missing their starting cornerbacks, though, still, and they're missing their starting center very likely still. And the Cardinals running game, I do think they're different than a month ago. I think they're more consistent throwing the ball, and when they get Kenyon Drake back, that three-headed monster does matter. I think him and Edmonds together are better than just one of them, and they put up, you know, over 200 yards rushing. They are the best rushing team in the league because of Kyler, but because they have those other two guys, and they coach up the offensive line really well.
One little note on the Seahawks defense. I feel you just come off a game with the Rams, a team you know really well. And the Dolphins basically, I thought, showed how a defense could diagnose Jared Goff and make life really difficult. Seattle took no notes from that, or if they did, were completely unable to duplicate that. So I don't see how you slow down this Cardinals team that feels like, I don't know what the ceiling is for the Cardinals. Would anyone be surprised if they were in the fourth quarter of the NFC title game with a chance to win? I wouldn't.
I wouldn't rule them out because I think Kyler Murray is an X factor in all of this discussion in the NFC. And speaking of Kyler Murray, my last thought on this game, we love MVP watch. I think Greg has now cleared it. We are allowed to talk about this on the podcast and on the internet. Is that clear, Greg? Are we okay?
Yeah. I mean,
emphatic yes.
Yeah, not
Greg.
Super. A little
okay.
bit of hesitancy.
We can start. We're starting to round that corner.
Okay, good. So anyway, primetime games, big deal. Big deal when you're talking about the MVP where it factors in. When people have to cast votes. And I have it right now, Mahomes at 1, Kyler at 2, Rodgers at 3, Russ at 4, and then take your pick, Kamara or Dalvin Cook at 5. That's my rankings for MVP. So this game, under the lights, and because they're different than the Sunday games, it's different than a Sunday 1 o'clock game. Don't listen to what Claymont says. These games are different. They matter more. And momentum's a real thing, and trap games exist. This is all real. And Santa is real. It's all there. Wait, anyway, whoever whoever really steps up and balls out as a quarterback in this game, that could make a difference in MVP watch.
Yeah. I would have Rodgers 1 right now and Mahomes 2. But I definitely don't have a problem with Murray and Russ being in there, you know, if they finish strong. And the Seahawks are favored in this game. We're like talking all doom and gloom. It's worth noting in the desert. They're favored. I think it's a total toss up. And I don't think it's necessarily because it's a primetime game, but I do think there is something to the fact that the Cardinals our new operation. They haven't been in these big games. We're starting to get to the portion of like their big game season. And I do think the, you know, having veterans and a veteran coaching staff and all that knowledge, like it helps the Seahawks a little bit here, and they know how important this is. And so it wouldn't surprise me if we see, the best Seahawks, you know, effort that we've seen over the last month. And it should be a good one. Great one.
This game is going to be 4.5 hours long.
If it's good, I'll be fine with that. It seems like we could have another great game. It's a good job for Colleen, and I hope she has one of these quarterbacks at the end of the game. If you put a Nerf gun to my head and had to pick the division winner, I probably would, despite all their problems, I would go with the Seahawks just because of all their big game experience, and I do believe Russ will come out of this slump. I think it's going to go down to the last week, and you could make a case for any of these teams besides the Niners, but I think the Seahawks are my pick where we stand right now.
I pick Cardinals, Seattle second, and the Rams. I understand the Rams. The metrics heads love
you
the Rams.
You hate the Rams so much.
No, I don't. I do not. I just I don't see it on a week-to-week basis. I don't see the makings of a team that's going to go on a Super Bowl run. I'd be really
talking
surprised.
Talking division, though. Just
they,
talking division.
I'd be really surprised if they won the division. I get overconfident. I confidently feel like Arizona's going to win this division.
Ooh. In terms of the division, right, I would side, even with the injury to Whitworth, which is a significant problem in terms of their Super Bowl aspirations, I think the defense is easily positioned as the best in the division, arguably one of the best in the NFL. Right. And they have talent, right, at spots that nobody else has. Aaron Donald is probably my perennial MVP pick as a literal player that's valuable in a relative position to his peers. To Greg's point, if all quarterbacks are at the top of your MVP list, then what are you saying about their relative value with each other, really? So I would say, you know, call it the Aaron Donald Award and give it to him every year because he's that much better than the other players. Eileen Rams in the division, maybe Seahawks in terms of threatening for the championship.
The one huge edge the Seahawks have is schedule. They have not played the NFC East, whereas the Cardinals and the Rams beat up. So if the Seahawks could somehow win this game on Thursday, you get their little mini bye. Then you got the Eagles, Giants, Jets, Washington before you play the Rams and 49ers at the end. So if you compare the schedules, it's a pretty significant edge to the Seahawks if they could pull this game out, especially.
Right. If they lose, they've been swept by Arizona. So
right.
I mean,
no, that's huge. But I mean, critical. But you know, it you suddenly play Cupcake City and you take care of business and you win four in a row while the Rams and the Cardinals are dealing with each other and dealing with tougher games. That's a problem.
Right. The path is wide open to 11 wins at least if you can win on Thursday, but got to win on Thursday. All right. Good stuff. Patrick Claibon, you've done it again. You've said it all. You've done it at the level of grace that very rarely is seen on this show.
I don't know about rarely. I mean, you guys crank it out every single time you're at the plate. I mean, to mark over 1,300 plate appearances, and as far as I'm concerned, you're on base every single time. So I'm glad to be not just in the stadium, in the general vicinity of this illustrious podcast.
I think we've been through a few batting slumps along the way, but thank you for that.
I'm pissed off, Angelo. All right. We'll be back on Thursday. We got, of course, the recap of Thursday Night Football coming. That's a mini episode, and then the full preview of everything to come in Week 11. Both those shows coming up this week. And also, you UK listeners and Game Pass subscribers, keep your eyes peeled. That's all I can say. I don't even know if I can say that.
Wow, that's a
I think it's Game Pass International, too. So, you know, you could be throughout Europe. You know, we know a lot of you are sheltering in place right now. I like the coordination going on
there
between the countries. And so you got more time at home. I think it's all the international Game Pass.
I know. I see the Irish listeners right now. Irish, we're not the UK. We're separate, and you are.
Yeah, we can't even agree on numbers over here. So congratulations, everybody.
Australia, right. Germany. We got
Estonia.
Listeners.
Sub-Saharan Africa.
Course,
it's all happening.
Africa. We're very blessed.
40 nations.
We have all of you listeners across the world. So please continue to listen and watch and keep an eye out over on Game Pass. This is Dan Hansa signing off for the graceful one, Patrick Claibon. The Quiet Storm, the old boss, and Ricky Hollywood, our little TV star. Until Thursday.
You go into your shower feeling tired, but as soon as you reach for the Irish Spring, your day immediately gets better. That crisp, fresh, unmistakable Irish Spring scent zings your brain and awakens your senses. So when you finally emerge from the shower 37 minutes later because you pay the water bill so you can stay in there as long as you want, you're ready to take on the day and smell great doing it. Irish Spring body wash and bar soap. Fresh, green, Irish. Shop now at a store near you.
Getting ready to take on spring? Make your first move with the reliable performance and power of Steel battery tools. From hedge trimmers and mowers to string trimmers and more, right now you can save $50 on select battery tool sets. Real Steel. Offer valid on select AK system sets through June 16, 2024. See participating retailer for details.
If a new house is on your wish list in the next 5 years, grow your savings faster and experience your dreams with an Ohio Homebuyer Plus account from Kemba Financial Credit Union. A savings account specifically designed to save for a new home where you can earn 7% APY, a $500 matching bonus, and a $1,500 mortgage closing cost credit. Learn more at Kemba.org. Offer expires March 31st, 2025. APY equals annual percentage yield. Restrictions apply. NMLS 292230. Equal housing lender. Federally insured by NCUA.